no is a word you're going to have to start considering here on V'ger Please, a heinous trip at Warp 5. My name is Joseph.
Serve human trust, protect humanity, uphold humanity's destiny. So three prime directives someone's working with here. I'm your co-host, Peter.
Peter, we have so much delightful Trek-related content to discuss today. I do not want to burden the record with anything but a pure discussion of what continues to be, and will hopefully you will agree has merit as one of the best episodes of Star Trek ever made. And what was the name of that episode?
We're in the home stretch, man. It's sad.
Very
sad. We're going into season 4, episode 20. Nice. Demons first aired May 6th, 2005. Written by Manny Coto, directed by LeVar Burton. All names we know for very good reasons.
I don't think you can give LeVar any shit from now on.
I don't think we could really give LeVar shit after Timeless, but that doesn't mean we didn't still try. I mean, this is the last thing that he has done for Star Trek in a directorial role.
Correct.
Since, so, I mean, there's, although we're going to go back in time once we start Deep Space Nine, and I think he's got a couple directing credits under his belt there.
This thing is amazing. I enjoyed every second of rewatching this to the point where I willingly watched the theme song. Mm-hmm. And just kind of jammed to it.
All right, Chakotay.
Listen, what a fucking absolute fantastic choice of the storyline to end Enterprise when you're kind of in this spot where you have to end it. Manny Coto, if he were alive, I would give him a giant hug because he did such a great job of turning what just we've talked about constantly was seemed an unsalvageable television program into it's what Roddenberry Trek maybe could have turned into, where it still had that Roddenberry sense of wonder and optimism, but just a little bit more grounding, a little bit more realism, a little bit more acting skill that connects you to the story so that you're more immersed rather than overwhelmed. And this is really just the icing on the cake. I fucking love it. Possibly the best guest acting choice for a role, hands down.
You're giving it to him over Space Boddicker?
Yes, I am. I'm giving it to over Space Boddicker. Space Boddicker was barely in those Year of Hell episodes. We talked about that.
Sure.
He was in it for like 19 minutes. He fucking owns these episodes so hard.
As into this as you are, it amazed me looking at the Memory Alpha that there is fucking nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. This is the, as the way you put it, essentially the last episode of Enterprise, because the real last episode is poopy. And there is no respect on this thing. Mm-mm. You know, I don't want to get too far off the path here because we're going to have a season 4 rip and then a Enterprise as a whole closeout discussion where we're going to, you know, look at it as an entire body of work. But, you know, we ultimately Enterprise is a failure because at least 50% of the episodes are trash and the first two seasons are fucking wasted. And if you had a magic wand, you could, you know, change anything and do whatever you want. This episode should have been where this plot line, this is what should have been in place instead of the stupid ass temporal Cold War. It should have been a Earth conspiracy to sabotage humanity's relationship with the galaxy that spanned 4 to 7 seasons, culminating in what actually happens here. And it should have been a little scene here and a little scene there. And, you know, very Mass Effect, Cerberus, the elusive man, which watching this now, I kind of have to wonder, like, how much of the elusive man storyline may have been influenced by this episode.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yes. I think you're really onto something there.
So, wow. You know, I can't talk to Manny Coto about it because I don't own a Ouija board. But maybe at some point we can find someone from old school BioWare and be like, hey, let me pick your brain on this thing.
Did you maybe a little bit binging on that season 4 caught that energy? I don't think you're wrong. And I mean, we have said many times that that was the spiritual successor of Trek, particularly in the video game space. And here is the bridge.
You've got this really well thought out polar opposite to the Federation. And I also love that this episode, the one good thing to take out of Memory Alpha is that chronologically, this episode starts the day after A Mirror Darkly Part 2. So in the Mirror Universe, which has just cemented its destiny of a Terran-centric empire with hyper-weapons that will rain terror throughout the galaxy and oppress all that it touches, you have the real universe beginning its finalizing steps into crystallizing the Federation and, you know, the complete antithesis to a human empire.
It's also a incredibly well thought out expression of the storyline of the season, which is a rare trait, I think, in a lot of Trek season finales. I mean, that's to say that they aren't often good, but they don't always tie the whole room together of a coherent story you told over this larger body of work. And in this episode, we are literally starting with the consequences of everything Enterprise did during season 4 to try and build relationships with other species to lead to this moment. In fact, several of those events are referenced during the episode.
There's two levels to that, too. There's simple stuff like mention of the augments, the Vulcan Andorian war being averted, the Vulcans and the Andorians and the Tellarites. Like, there's key hard plot points, and then there's a meta plot of season 4, which, you know, again, this is something to discuss more in the season 4 rip, but season 3 was humanity versus the Zindi and eventually the sphere builders,
right? Correct.
And shooting from the hip here, I really got to go through and look at my notes, but I would say that season 4 feels more like humanity versus itself and humanity having to come to terms with who they were, sins of the past, and a concerted effort to move the needle forward. And that's encapsulated very well here because you have the future of humanity versus stagnation or a
nativist attitude, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's inescapable, of course, that these themes that we're going to go through in this episode, they're going to seem resonant to the current year in which we're recording it, but they would also, I think, seem resonant almost at any time. Like the concept of progress representing a more coalition building, a more integrationist perspective, some of which is idealistic, some of which is practical. We're going to see both in this episode expressed extremely well. But also there's a rejection of that that says this change represents something so fundamental to my understanding of who I am or our collective understanding of who we are that we choose to oppose it. And eventually our opposition grows so strident that we choose to oppose it violently. All that to say, in doing so, they have the wherewithal to make sure that the villain isn't completely crazy, right? Like, that he has a whole plan and a whole idea, and it's not entirely unreasonable.
That's exactly what I wanted to say. Before we go deeper on this, speaking to Peter Weller and Manny Coto as a writer, one part of it is, Paxton, right? That's his name?
Yeah, John Frederick Paxton, a great villain name if there ever was one.
He is competent. And he has he's got a pretty good ledge he's standing on, right? This guy isn't completely wobbly. They also duck the Dick's Sporting Good dilemma of season one and season two, where the fucking writer's room could not make a despicable villain for the life of them. Because despite the fact that this guy's got, like, he's civilized and he's intelligent and, you know, he's got this weird ethical rickety bridge he's on, he's also patently evil and you cannot really root for him. The guy is a bad guy. He is demonstrably bad. He is evil in practice.
Yeah, he's committed and not everything he's saying is wrong, but he is morally incorrect. And,
yes.
And the story makes very clear he's morally incorrect and his actions are indefensible, but the reasons for his actions are treated seriously and not without merit.
Right. It's been such an Achilles heel on Enterprise that from Colonel Grott to the Dick's Sporting Good guys and just almost any stage you go to, the bad guys having this real reasonable thread where you're like, do they
I don't know. I don't
how
know
they're this. Portraying? And this guy, you're like, all right, this guy is a great final boss that you're going to have to defeat to create the Federation.
And so and that's what I said last week, right? Like, what if the final boss was humanity itself? What if you had to beat literal space Hitler?
What if you have to beat a business suit?
a smart looking one on RoboCop at that.
Yeah.
So who's not the only guest star? Because in our teaser, we're off to the races. It's not just RoboCop. It's Patrick Fischler from LA Confidential / Mad Men, somehow in this fucking thing.
You know, and he is such a dead ringer for, I botch this guy's name, David Dastmalch, the guy who played Polka Dot Man from Suicide Squad.
A little bit.
He's also the Blade Runner tech. It's, I don't know, they're the same character actor. But yeah, they've got two real recognizable, like, semi-famous, in RoboCop's case, extremely famous.
Oh, yeah.
And also to point out, too, like, I can't tell you anybody else who went from being a 80s action hero good guy to being able to play the number of bad guys that Peter Weller has.
Well, Peter Weller wasn't necessarily cast for his ability to be heroic. He was cast for his ability to accurately portray a soulless robot. and so turns out that those skills are a little bit more transferable to playing guys like this. From the jump, Peter Weller crushes so hard as this guy in maintaining the pose, his eyes, the way he looks at things, the way he talks about things. You know exactly what this dude is fucking about.
He fills the room with a presence. And that's another thing that Enterprise has fallen short on, is they have not brought a lot of big personalities in as their guest actors. I listened to Daedalus, our review of Daedalus, and what a tragic failure in casting they had as, you know, picking this guy who just was too soft or not committed for the transporter engineer. Complete opposite thing here. Like, you know, and again, you've got a huge fucking movie star. Like, say what you will about RoboCop, but this guy was in three blockbuster movies. Peter Weller has to have a nice chunk of change. And here he is, you know, fooling around in dead end TV. Not that anybody's beating Peter Weller's door down, like, hey, we need you, please. But, like, you got a fucking movie star on the third to last episode of a TV show that was supposed to be canceled a season ago that nobody is watching, that's being aired in the Friday death slot.
Yeah, you definitely decided to spend all of your money on that this season, right? Like, why did Observer Effect not have any sets? And it was all going into the Hire Peter Weller fund at the end of the season.
And that's the right call.
It was. And him and Patrick Fischler are on some kind of space station. It is not clear. It's internal. They're talking about some kind of patient. Seems to be some sort of medical situation is happening. And eventually what we find out as the camera pans over is that the patient they're talking about that RoboCop mentions is, you know, seems so innocent, kind of seems disdainful of whatever it is a little baby. It's a little baby girl. And a little baby girl's got Vulcan ears.
I was fully expecting it to actually be T'Pol in there somehow.
Just wait, like they already have capped, like in media res.
Yeah. Or that, you know, that's a clone or something, which who know, you know, for all I know, this baby is some sort of a clone or whatever. But yeah. Hey, I am a very clearly some sort of a corporate terrorist. I've got my evil scientist guy. I've got a little baby, and there's some despicable shit that is going to go on.
It's like, none of this seems like it's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
When we cut back, we are hearing a captain's log from Archer, who is saying that Enterprise has returned to Earth. And we are in what appears to be a very nice conference room at a Holiday Inn Express, where evidently they have chosen to have one of the most important meetings that the entirety of planet Earth will ever have. And that is a diplomatic conference to potentially create something called the Coalition of Planets. And there's a guy who we've not met before who's giving a long-winded political speech about humanity and bringing people together to have this conversation as we pan over all the different alien races. We see them all. We see the Andorians. We see the Tellarites. We see the Vulcans. And eventually, in the staircase at the Holiday Inn Express, are standing our heroes. And they're hearing the speech, a little miffed that perhaps their names aren't being mentioned in the reason why this whole conference is happening.
Now, you said we don't recognize this this guy giving the speech. But we do, Joe. This is a very important man. This is, remember when Kes made the mistake of walking in the temple and got zapped by the ghost wall, and then Janeway had to go on that spirit quest with the people in the sweatbox room?
Yeah, Sacred Ground. I love that episode, and you hated it.
It's a piece of shit episode. Well, he was the president magistrate guy there. But more importantly, what we're looking at is essentially the president of Earth, Tam Elbrum. Tin Man's ride or die. This man has killed many a Romulan with his pulses swatting to Derridex's away. How cool that this guy is. Well, I don't know. That fucking Voyager role was not the greatest, but like Tin Man, which was a real standout TNG in terms of, you know, being able to remember such a ridiculous episode. And then here he is. He gets to be the proto president of.
He's the he's called Minister Samuels. It's not like really clarified what his authority actually is or what his office represents, but it is portrayed that he is president of Earth for all intents and purposes.
Given off real bad guy vibes, I'm going to be very interested to see where they go with this character in the second episode, because all the Star Trek red flags are here that this guy is ultimately evil and is going to betray the crew. All that again starts with the fact that he is in a room full of people that are all friends with Enterprise, and he does not mention Jonathan Archer or the Enterprise one time. And I like that. Yeah, it's Trip, like, that's real salty about it. And you got Archer there, like, fucking knock it off. You better clap. You know, Earth News is here recording this. Like, we need to make just 22nd
century journalists are hanging out here. We got to look good.
Listen, they got their Bluetooth headsets. Like, quit fooling around, guys.
So, yeah, they try to color the set a little bit with 22nd century journalism, which apparently is like this complicated headset that's supposed to look futuristic. But, you know, as the curse of any old cheap television show, doesn't
looks like an old Super Nintendo accessory.
Yeah.
You would wear that along with the Super Scope.
You're trying. You're trying, but your lack of money is showing in this moment.
And there is specific attention called out that all of the delegates and everybody there is wearing a clip-on cigar case. It's basically the size of like a Nokia whatever the popular phone was back then. And that's the universal translator, which in any other circumstance would be cool. Like, wow, they're explaining, except there's like 50 episodes in the past four seasons where there has been universal translators with nothing present on people whatsoever.
If they had only clarified in dialogue that, well, you know, the Enterprise does have a universal translator. I used the universal translator on Enterprise as the basis for creating this so that it would be mobile, you know, like some kind of bridge dialogue that explained that it's basically an adaptation of the thing that Hoshi essentially has crafted over the course of 4 years within the Enterprise computer. And that miniaturizing it was like a particular success.
Yeah, but all the away team missions and everything else, like if this thing had just been and again, magic pen, if this was like first season or they had just had that built in like one of those sleeve pockets and that's just always been on people as the universal translator prop, which they totally should have, whatever, but the universal translator will become a very important plot element later on.
Speaking of the plot element that it's related to,
of the biggest conference to ever happen on Earth, where you have the most important people from just about every sentient species in your quadrant, and they're all here on Earth, which was just space 9/11
a year ago. Well, 2 years ago.
Okay. And there, with the most important people ever, you have a security detail that essentially consists of a glass door with a sensor that just opens to whoever wanders in off the street bleeding, holding a gaping chest wound.
We get to the bleeding chest wound, we actually have another important plot point that happens here. The writers decided that the last person to get a love interest is going to be Travis Mayweather.
The writers decided to sit down and talk to Anthony Montgomery and say, listen, dude, you did a pretty nice job in Mirror Mirror. Like, you're good at kicking people. You're so good. Like
the best Simon Phoenix snap kicks we've ever seen.
That was good. Were you on like a stunt team for Demolition Man? Like, tell me about yourself, man. He's like, well, you know, I did a lot of daytime TV romance stuff. And they're like, really?
Yeah.
What if we give you a lot of
Days of Our Lives?
What if we give you a plot romance, like romance subplot? Oh, well, then I can actually act for a change. And it's like that He-Man action figure that you could like spin the chest and the face, the head would spin in like a different face. And you went from a guy who is essentially a beautiful 2x4 that is supposed to be piloting the ship and being, you know, an experienced space mariner, to someone who is actually like very fluid and natural and does a great job. I'm like,
where's this fucking guy been? Like, four seasons.
Did they just dope you up? Like, are you acting enhancing drugs?
Four seasons, man. You could have turned this on any time. I'm sure they would have thrown you some more plots.
It's very much the Kate Mulgrew daytime TV thing. Like, this guy cut his teeth clearly doing soft relationship struggle daytime TV soap opera stuff. And that's what they give him here. And he does a fucking great job. I can't think of anybody in the cast that you could have swapped him out for this little romance angle, except maybe Trip. That could have nailed it as well as he did in this stuff. And normally I hate fucking romance subplots, and it was so refreshing to see this guy just knock it out of the park that I was happy to see it here.
I do like that they gave him a romantic partner that was also very good. So the character is Gannett, which of course is funny because that's the name of a major newspaper publisher, so that's why they picked it. And she is played by Johanna Watts.
She is the daughter of hippies growing up in Florida.
Johanna is also someone whose acting ability seems very focused on doing the relationship drama, because we've never seen these two together. We've never heard anything about this woman before, but I am immediately and instantly convinced by the both of them that they are exes, that they have feelings for each other, and we're going to pick up that backstory as we just watch this reunion start to occur over the course of the episode. It's almost unnatural for Trek for romance subplots to actually be this good. Typically, the one-off romance stuff doesn't actually work very well in terms of convincing you of what's going on. I think it's helped by the fact that they chose Elaine, that this is someone who is clearly an old flame of Travis from when he was on Earth before he decided to go from hauling cargo to being a Starfleet officer. And so, you know, he was on Earth and doing a lot of training, got a girl, decided to bounce anyway, kind of one of those kind of military X's situation. I think that plays super great for not only Travis as a character, but Trek as a whole. And it's not something they've ever really done before. And it's a good lane because it gives you that extra edge to make you believe, oh, this is a real relationship. And the stuff that's going on, it's because there's stuff that happened off screen. And I can just kind of imagine what that looked like because this is something that's real and I can identify it in my own life.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, some homeless lady comes wandering in off the street with what looks like the detonator for what I'm assuming is a C4 vest. And she's about to like suicide this thing and just blow them all up. I'm like, damn, their security's terrible. But instead, like, she stumbles into the Enterprise crew and she's like, they're going to kill her. And she hands over a vial of hair and they pull open the shirt and she's got her own Major Hayes commemorative chest wound.
When we cut back to Enterprise, Phlox shares that the lady has died. Her could not be saved from her chest wound. Her name was Susan Corey. And what she had in that container was, in fact, some hair that Phlox has worked hard to identify. Love Phlox in this episode. He's very hesitant to convey what he's about to say because he knows it's going to be a big fucking deal. But eventually, he slowly starts to reveal that it is a baby, a girl, and it is the offspring of both Trip and T'Pol.
Dun, dun, dun.
Very, like, predictable after we saw the teaser. Like, well, if we're going to have a baby that's, you know, a Vulcan, it's probably going to be theirs.
Certainly not Spock.
But it is received with the right level of gravitas by the characters, so that, yeah, is while I am the viewer, I'm not like surprised, I'm still very into the journey everyone's about to take.
Right, and the big question is how. Clearly, these two have had conjugal visits. Clearly, T'Pol has some very shady action she's taken in her past, including doing crack under everybody's nose.
So don't lose your visitation rights too. You be real careful.
You know, yeah, that's what happened. Was actually Child Protective Services came and took my embryo away from me because they knew I was doing space rock.
and
very serious. That's a mandatory reporting.
It is.
There and
yeah. Yeah, and the how is the next scene, right? Like, we've got Trip and T'Pol talking about it in her quarters. This is a Trip and T'Pol who are in a relationship now, as we saw after Bound. It's been going on for about a month based on in-universe time. They kind of act like it, because multiple times in this episode, T'Pol calls Trip, not, you know, Tucker, not
Commander.
It's being pretty intimate in how she's identifying him.
This is the worst scene in the episode because they go through like, well, how did this happen? Because you didn't have a child. Like, how do you explain this? And it's like, look at the past fucking 48 days you guys have spent in space. And let's get out the big what if, Matt. I don't know. Maybe it's a transporter clone. Maybe our child was time traveled from the future. Maybe it's an alternate reality.
maybe some sort of genetic science was involving augment DNA was involved.
Exactly. Like how how could there not be our child out there? There is 101 fucking different organizations and monsters gunning for us, and all of them have super science, dimensional shifting, time travel at their disposal. Like,
our enemies are many and they are powerful. Yeah. We can definitely do this.
It's not, I can't think of anything. It's like, how do we narrow this? How do you Occam's razor the absurdity that we have experienced for the past 2 fucking years? We were fighting Nazis
this season. So I get why they took a pass on that, because they don't want to overrun what's otherwise a pretty good emotional moment.
Sure.
You know, like, yes, you're right. Logically, they should sit down and be like, well, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but well, hold on. Let's think just outside the box. Guys,
let's bring in the bigger whiteboard. What are we doing with this small one? We need the big whiteboard. You know, just fuck it. We're writing on the walls.
Yeah. But it's a good time for Trip and for T'Pol to have an intimate conversation to demonstrate their closeness. That's what it's really there for. And for ultimately for T'Pol to sit down very near Trip and say, actually, I know it's true. I know the moment that Phlox said that, he was right. And it's a baby out there and it's ours. I'm absolutely certain of it. And Trip's just like, I don't get it. How do you know this? And T'Pol just looks at him and says, I'm Vulcan.
We're OP.
I mean, I get it, though. Like, I have powers that go beyond what's rational in terms of my mental acuity, awareness, and ability to communicate. I know I have a kid out there.
Anything that goes in or comes out of my vagina has a telepathic link with us. Okay. TMI, but now facts. You know.
That's why we only bang once every 8 years. We learned that it's just if you do it more frequently, you're just,
it's a conference call and no, it's a group text that nobody wants to be in.
Yeah. Ugh. No orgies on Vulcan.
Ugh. You do not want to be in this igloo. I'm going to tell you right now. Koss was smart to stay away. I also like the subplot, but the ongoing thread again, that maybe she is being dishonest. She could have thought something was the logical, like, you don't know. Trip has this doubt. She becomes aware of the doubt later on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a reasonable doubt. Like, they're dealing with a real kooky situation here.
It's like more rational to think like, yeah, well, we have banged T'Pol. You could have gotten pregnant. Like, that's not a crazy thought.
They had said previously that humans and Vulcans were incompatible. They don't really make a big deal out of it here, saying like, wait, this isn't supposed to be able to happen, and then have like, you know, the life finds a way scene or whatever. I forget, does Archer have his conversation with Tam Elbrum first, or does he go to Reed and say, hey, listen, I need you to go be dirty?
Oh, no, he has the conversation with Tam Elbrum first, because that's what leads him to telling Reed to go.
Oh, coffee talk. That's right.
Yeah. So you want to talk about, you know, you think that's maybe the worst scene in the episode? I like this one the best. Having coffee in the conference room here on Enterprise, the seldom used legal judgment room. And we get a fantastic realism perspective from Samuels. As Tam. To why it's important to proceed with the coalition of planets versus Archer's idealism. And I love this sort of moment in Trek when we kind of have this conflict of they're on the same page. They want the same result, but they have very different reasons as to why. Samuels wants to make a deal because it's like, oh yeah, well, remember that whole Zindi thing? You went and fought them. You realize that Earth is fucked if it's by itself. We cannot hack it. Out here with all of these antagonists without friends. We don't have the Vulcans babysitting us anymore. It leaves us one option. Let's find some people we can work with and make sure we're watching each other's backs. There's strength in numbers, right?
Very I could practical. Have gone for a barbed shot at Archer and saying, you know, we don't have high command sponsoring us anymore. You know, the actions that you've taken on Vulcan, the Vulcans are a fraction of the powerhouse they used to be because of their internal restructuring. we need to evolve our strategy as well.
Yeah, like some reference to the fact that's Archer's doing ultimately.
Which was the right move.
Yeah.
But there's a real repercussion there, you know, which, again, we all remember when the Zindi were breathing down their necks, like the Vulcans were zero fucking help, so whatever. But
it is like a rational, practical, correct view of why you need to have friends that's not really rooted in any kind of idealism. It's just straight, pragmatically, we almost already got murdered once. And the only reason we didn't is that you were friends with the Andorians, or at least one Andorian who helped us out. Right. So with that knowledge in mind, clearly that's the path we have to go down for self-preservation. Well, Archer obviously is like, no, you know, this is about building a better future together. To which it's like, I'm not against that, but that's not really the reason I care. I care because I want to make sure Earth survives.
Do you think Tam Elbrum knows about the temporal Cold War?
Absolutely. He's supposed to be the president of Earth. I'm sure he's been briefed.
That would be another, you know, thing he should have levied there. You know, not only are we fighting the Zindi, we're fighting people trying to fucking Sarah Connor us.
Yeah, mess with time, you know, like
we got guys going back to fucking Detroit eating all of our hamburgers trying to poison us. Same deal. If we are going to drag all the fucking time travel nonsense in, as Trip's being salty on the stairs because Tam Elbrum's not name dropping Enterprise or giving Archer any respect. And everybody's like getting huffy puffy. Do you think like that's why Archer doesn't give a fuck? He's like, this is all bullshit. Something bad's going to happen because I know it's going to be me in front of the Super Bowl doing it, not this bullshit at the fucking community college lobby.
I don't think he necessarily shared all of the details. He may have kept, but I'm saying
he knows. And he's just like, this isn't how it goes down. It's going to be a big fucking deal. Tam Elbrum's going to get knifed or Abraham Lincoln or something here.
It makes, I mean, I think there's a lot to be said about Archer knowing that he's right about why things are happening and what his destiny is, maybe guiding him in some way. I mean, that's been, in my opinion, the quiet theme of the entire season. And it's something I brought up when we were doing season 3, you know, like he realizes from this revelation about his destiny that he has to do all of these things we've seen him do this season. He never says that, but it flows from that moment.
Yeah.
Right.
He's playing with time Zuck knowledge. He got to go in the future and read library books. He knows what's going on.
Absolutely. And what else he knows what's going on is when Samuels brushes him off about getting involved in the investigation or whatever the fuck is going on, which Samuels wants to keep quiet. That's the real reason they're talking. They want to talk about that this kid exists. They don't want to really talk about who this woman was that showed up to the conference. They want to keep this thing on the rails. And he brushes him off and being involved. And that's when Archer, who's no longer anyone's dummy, knows that there's bullshit going on and we're being frozen out. And if the Vulcans could not succeed in keeping my fucking nosy ass where it don't belong, you're sure as shit not cool enough to do it. And he's barely left the room before he goes over to the intercom and says, hey, Reed, you know that thing I was mad at you about a few episodes ago? Fucking call that guy. Call him right now.
Reed, remember that time I put you in jail?
For a while? While we were fighting Klingons?
Because, of your alternative command structure. I know this is kind of a mixed message, but I'm dying to know where this fucking baby came from. Can you go? I need you to transport down to Gotham City.
The pier down in Gotham City specifically.
I don't think it's a pier. I think it's a... Dude,
no, there were seagulls. He's supposed to be at the gritty San Francisco piers.
Oh, I thought he was in Gotham City on the fucking rooftop because the force person. Okay, I have not laughed. There's been a lot of bad scenes, right? But it's like weird sci-fi scenes, minus the awards dais that was terrible in Bay Stadium. But yeah, he's like, go to Gotham City. And this thing, it's this backdrop that would look very impressive for community theater of like a lit up force perspective skyline. I'm saying he's on a rooftop because there is a knock flat plastic Gaylord with a can in the middle of it that's supposed to be some sort of a smokestack. And Reed, wandering around with his hands in the pocket of his, you know, he's in like, street clothes, and he goes to Commissioner Gordon or Fat Man from Section 31, who's there in his goony leather tunic. It's a cool scene, though. I mean, minus the fact, ridiculous setup. It's just absurd.
It's the set was made with $8. It was bad. And the foghorn and the seagulls in the background to make it seem like you're in some gritty wharf in some crime noir drama. I'm like, motherfucker, is this the 22nd century? Okay. What do you think? This is 1936. You're about to meet with Jimmy the Nose, who's going to break a few legs for you. Like, what is this?
Yeah. I'm sorry. What are these noises? Are they meeting at Freeport?
So he goes down there to talk to his old boss. And like you said, the scene is good because his old Section 31 boss says, if we're talking, you're in. And he doesn't actually respond to that. He looks away for a second and then re-asks his question, which I thought was a clever way of him saying, I'm saying yes, but I'm saying yes in the terms I'm going to define by saying, okay, I will accept the premise of your question by re-asking because now I'm agreeing because you're not going to give me the information I want, but it's not necessarily going to be the same relationship we had before.
I didn't get that read off of it. I got that, you know, Reed, for whatever character development they managed to squeeze into this guy, is basically turning him from a reptile into a human, as best exemplified during the heavy casualties of the Zindi War, where he finally, like, is not okay with the math on what acceptable losses are, and that it really hurt him when he got put in the pokey for betraying Archer's trust, and that this is kind of like, I never want to be back in this situation again, but ultimately I'm loyal to Archer, and I'm loyal to, like, my friends that now have fucking kids that I used to fantasize about her ass when I was laid up in sickbay. I'm willing to step back in dog shit because I can't, you know, this is my life and I can't have a better life. And this is what needs to happen.
No, I definitely caught that energy too. And I also liked that in the conversation he has, he actually, Harris is giving good information about who's behind this. He says it's this terrorist organization called Terra Prime. They have been more active as of late as a consequence of a rash of xenophobia related to the Zindi attack. That they had already, they'd always been a factor, they'd always been loud, they'd always offered political opposition, particularly when Enterprise was launched. But after the Zindi attacked and 7 million people died, they got a lot more interest. And it's died down a little, but it's still a pretty potent force on Earth. And this provides the first real clue that they've been given. But in the course of that conversation, Harris kind of probes Reed's beliefs about what's going on and suggests that Harris isn't completely opposed to Paxton's ultimate plan. He seems a little suspicious of too close a relationship between Earth and, but he's clearly not sympathetic because he's giving them good leads to go on.
To be fair, also, we just saw in the augment, and not the augments, the General Uncle Phil stuff, like, this dude was working and got played by the Klingons. Like, Section 31 is not above cooperating and reciprocating with other alien organizations. Let me real quick jump back over to Mass Effect here. And what I think you really have to see is strong, whatever. Terra Prime, which is the Earth First organization that RoboCop's heading up, and the elusive man and the illusions there. I'm sorry. Then you switch over to Mass Effect, which had Terra Firma, which was the Earth First organization that wanted to reject the Alliance and getting involved with the Citadel. And I don't think there was a tight connection between Cerberus in Terra Firma per se, but like these are all elements that get taken or that are shared between this episode specifically and Mass Effect.
I would agree. I mean, I think
they're solid concepts for a Earth entering the intergalactic community.
Yeah, Terra Prime and Cerebus are definitely the connection I made as well. Both technologically advanced, they have a charismatic leader with access to resources. They have a very clear pro-human agenda, and they're willing to implement it with force. You know, like that's just, it's once you mentioned the elusive men, I couldn't get away from that thought either. We get to know more about this as we head back to the moon, where apparently Paxton is with his goons. And on this moon base, he's having a conversation with the doctor that we saw earlier that's played.
He is not, Patrick Fisher was not in LA Confidential. He's in a couple of
Black Dahlia. I'm sorry. Yeah. He was in Black Dahlia.
More importantly, he's the guy in Idiocracy in the beginning that is the reasonable parent that is delaying having smart kids while the hillbillies are going crazy and breeding like mad.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then and dies before he can have any children.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I remember him more as Jimmy Barrett. He was in that first season or two of Mad Men. But yeah, he was, I apologize for saying LA Confidential, you're right. He was in Brian De Palma's other movie that took place in the 40s. That's a police drama in LA. He's in that one, not the other one.
So anyways, RoboCop is not happy that, and also, Peter Weller does such a great job in this. Like, it's not surprising they recast him as another bad guy for Into Darkness, which I still say I liked.
Like the movie or just him?
Both?
I
can
say him, I guess, but like not the movie. Movie was bad.
The movie's not bad. The movie's good.
Don't say that too loud.
Listen, man. Like, there's like four people that I've seen that really did not like it.
Into Darkness?
The popular consensus I see is that the Fast and Furious one people did not like, and Into Darkness is one that they did like.
I can't wait for the Archadish to step in and inform you how incorrect you are.
Listen, man, I'm telling you what I hear on the street.
Jack, get on it.
He is not happy because this dude has been ultra cautious. He's got a solid ass plan. It's a ridiculous plan. But he is playing real close to the vest, and now Patrick Fischler, what's his name? Mercer?
Yes, Mercer.
Mercer's subordinate, who is crazy chest wound lady, has endangered everything. And if it wasn't for this lady, he would have gotten away with this scot-free. And now he is doubting everything. This guy, Paxton, is not someone you want as a boss. I'm going to tell you that right now.
No, he, it's a very strict conversation where he makes it very clear he's going to kill a baby during that conversation. So we know what the stakes are. Eventually dismisses Patrick Fischler, but immediately calls in his number two guy, Daniel. And Daniel is exactly the number one goon that every bad guy deserves. Right? Like every evil overlord should have as capable a minion as Daniel. And immediately says, okay, Daniel, grab some guys and go into the mine and murdered the fuck out of that dude in an hour.
What do they call this guy? The lead enforcer when they're competent, the Vader is called the Dragon, right?
Something like that. This is the Dragon.
This is a good dragon too.
And so, yeah, we're apparently wrapping things up because he's immediately made a kill order on this doctor who has failed him. And he does hit himself with a little jab of some sort of kind of medicine. So he's got a medical issue of himself, or he's injecting something into his neck.
Well, yeah. So the doctor came up to inform him that the baby's health is solid.
Mm-hmm.
Gave a sample, maybe it was some like weird isolinear chip or something. Yeah, I forgot about him injecting himself.
They don't do anything else with it. You just see it. Action transfers back down to Earth. And we have a conversation where Archer decides to saddle up to the president of Earth, Samuels, to have a little chat and let him know not getting cooperation from Starfleet investigators on what's going on with this whole caper with my crew members apparently having kids now that have been made. He tries to brush him off again, and that's when he decides to reveal, oh, you know, I've done my investigating. I know that the lady with the chest wound, she was in Terra Prime. And I know you were too.
Damn, that's, you dirty boy.
That's when Samuel suddenly wants to have him come off with him off to the side maybe and have a little chit-chat. Archer, I know you've never had to deal with a surprise boot squad before, but this is when the quell happens. When you threaten the prince.
Yeah.
Here it comes, buddy. You bet. Unless you're about to turn the corner and Samuels is about to run face first into Trip, who's going to wither his head. Like, you need to stop.
He pulls him off to the side. He's like, listen, I know you thought you deleted those alt-right tweets, buddy.
Found your burner account. Right.
Right. But I had to Paul go on the Wayback Machine. And you're busted, Tam. You're busted bad. And he's like, oh, shit.
Samuel's Rules 1488 has been found.
You have a secret. I saw all your pro-General Green rhetoric. And he's like, listen, I fucked up. I was 18. My dad had just died. It was a Denobulan pilot. I blame them and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And somehow this real dark period of my history was completely omitted because we're in the future where there's no more mudslinging ads. And,
you know, it's what happens when you start having negative political advertising.
The Vulcans took away, you know, PAX or whatever. And he goes, all right, well, listen, clearly I underestimated, like, again, just classic bad guy dialogue. I see I've underestimated you and you'll get exactly what you deserve now. You'll have your file.
I got a little bit of a different vibe where it's like, I think Samuels knows he's not in a position to threaten the heroes that saved Earth. And so if I'm not in a position to threaten you, and you are in a position to threaten me, mm-hmm. I should probably cooperate. That is not to say he won't be an impediment, but they are steering away from the cartoonish, somehow I'm going to convince Earth their saviors aren't, and they're going to back me somehow.
Not having seen this stuff before, to me, it seems like there's heavy breadcrumbs that Tam Elbrum is still involved somehow with this Terra Firma conspiracy, and that he is not ultimately working in Archer's favor. It's not certain. I mean, and I guess really the damning evidence that I'm wrong is that when Archer walks away, that it's not like sinister music in the camera slowly zooming in on Tam Elbrum's eyes as he like squints and is like, fuck you, shoots him the bird, and then, you know, drags his thumb across his neck. Maybe LeVar Burton's a little too
refined subtle
for that.
Yeah. Back on Enterprise, we start to see the relationship between Gannett and Travis.
Only thing they're really worth mentioning that we haven't talked about is that he takes her on to Shuttle Pod 1 to, you know, this is the one we infiltrated the sphere with, and she walks in. I really would have just fucking felt seen if she was like, how exactly does this thing connect? Like, where is the top hat? Can I record that, or is this Federate, or is this Starfleet secrets?
Yeah. I mean, it's more good content between the two of them that we already talked about. And I did like they get to the shuttle bay and the way she's, which one did you penetrate this sphere in? I want to go in the one that's the penetrating sphere. And sure enough, she gets penetrated within that particular.
I like the conversation that he low-key resents that the shuttle pods are not really used as much anymore
because there's too much transporting happening. Yeah,
there's transporting. He feels like he's cheating on the shuttles when they use the transporter, and again, great transporter acceptance continuity that, like, yeah, like everybody's soul has been removed and all of us clones are fine with doing this more and more. By the way, hey, here's a new story for you. Do you know that the guy that invented the transporters is evil?
His son was a demon. It nearly killed us. In all of this, Trip actually goes down and talks to Phlox and has a bit of a heart-to-heart about the fact that apparently he has a child out there somewhere. Another great Phlox moment where Trip expresses his speculative distrust in the statement that T'Pol has never been pregnant. You know, like, it doesn't say that she's lying, but says, well, it could be that she did. It could be that she was pregnant. It could be I impregnated her, which is the first time, you know, probably Trip has told someone he's fucked her. Like, you know, like, I don't think he's necessarily had that conversation with T'Pol based on, he hasn't had that conversation with Phlox based on how Phlox reacts to it. Right.
Phlox like, should have been like, oh, wow, you fucked her. You don't say. Jeez. The hottest piece of gossip on the ship. I just never would have thought.
You know, like, you could speculate that you two were close. That you obviously were friends. You might have, you know,
not have actually had sex. Phlox basically grabbed Trip's dick and shoved it in her. All right.
That's
this
true.
Is the last person to be surprised about this.
Phlox also tried to grab his dick and shove it in his wife's as well.
Also that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Phlox, you know.
But the way Phlox is like, okay, well, let's run through this logic, huh? How likely do you think this is? And he's like, okay, you're right.
Phlox, have you not been here for the past fucking 2 years? How do you think that embryo got out? I don't know. While we were being transported, maybe the fucking truck stop came back and transport. Like, a lot of zany shit's happened, Phlox. You should not be the doubting Thomas in this equation.
Or at least you should say, what do you think's more likely? That these things happened without your knowledge, or someone's found a way to create a clone daughter using your DNA somehow. Like,
I don't know, Phlox, 50-50, dude. Let me look through my notes here real fast. What were we doing 4 episodes ago? Babel one, which one was that? The Andorian
Tellarite, you know, alliance. The yeah. Romulan drone ship.
I mean, listen, if you know, plus you, not that they knew that they were Romulans, but those treacherous motherfuckers, if there's someone who could snipe an embryo out of a womb, it's those guys. Rajin, what if it was Orion slave girls? Anything's possible.
Well, they would have been the ones impregnated, but but it would have been by Colby and Archer. We also have a scene in here where Paxton is watching some archival footage, and it's kind of where you start to turn him into like a character with some actual opinions and ideas that have some meat on them. And whoever this is Colonel Green, and Colonel Green, just after the Third World War, was some kind of military dictator. And evidently Colonel Green made the decision to preserve the human race from mutation and disease as a consequence of nuclear war, to exterminate some couple hundred thousand people so that they wouldn't spread their damaged genes and cause future generations of humanity to be burdened by this damage. He is apparently a very controversial historical figure, such that his defense of him ended up getting him kicked out of college.
Colonel Green, by the way, is portrayed by the same guy who was the Romulan that got stuck in Planet Hell Caves with Geordi. Wow, maybe he cast him.
Yeah.
Like maybe LeVar Burton's like, gosh, I was wondered what old Steve Rankin's up to. I wonder if he wants to be Space Hitler. So did Colonel Green successfully kill all those people?
Yes. Yes, he did.
And again, the goal there was that you wouldn't have lingering mutated DNA haunting the human gene pool.
Correct. That, you know, he wants a pure humanity that can go into the future, not one with radiation damaged genes that spread cancer. And so he killed them all.
Judging by his uniform, is this the same era as when Q zapped Picard back for the courtroom scenes and the guards had like cocaine zip lines.
I think it's got to be some point after that, technically. Or within that era, right? We're talking about just the post-nuclear horrors, 3 years after the Third World War was over, barely an armistice, right?
So he would have went in there and gotten all the like little weird people from that courtroom and just rounded up and killed them, I guess. Again, the World War III stuff, the lack of firm continuity, whatever, like the only way you can accept these things is just as loose events and ideas that don't look at it too hard. It's just, it's something in the past we had to grow past and whatever. It's a nice bonding moment for RoboCop and the dragon, because the dragon had the same professor and had the same issues. And all of these people have somehow found their way to the moon because they wanted to go be Moonanites and move space rocks and kind of find this union of congenial minds. Archer's like, Section 31 came through on us. We know that there's something to do with this lady, Terra Prime. Phlox is able to get the blood and say, there's markers in here. We think that there's some sort of mining colony, like grav plating. An alternative to grav plating, basically, is this, what this is, a telltale sign.
Correct. Like, this is a drug you take when you are on, have long-term exposure to zero G. You only have long-term exposure to zero G is if you're in a mining colony in a remote area. And the closest mining colony is on the moon.
In Conveniently, our good friend Travis Mayweather is friends with people on the moon. And you can get a away team in there to go infiltrate. Kind of sloppy overlay, because like he appears to be in the middle of banging reporter Hottie while all this is going on.
And yeah,
he rolls out of bed long enough to call his friend and be like, hey, I got friends that need a job. Can I send them out to you? And they're like, yeah. And he like hops back in bed. The fact they send T'Pol out to the space station that is suspected of anti-alien space haters, and she's not even wearing a fucking hat.
She's it's just also like, if you're the two people whose DNA they took, and then they probably know what you look like. You're like, we should be sending two jabronis. We should be sending two
Makos.
Yes. Instead, we're sending the two people most likely to be identified for being world famous heroes that are the targets of a conspiracy.
It beams down. Everybody's just like, yeah, listen, I watched the Bay Stadium footage. Like, I know. I know what Taylor Swift looks like.
I know what that hot Vulcan lady looked like too, and it's you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, look, it's Taylor Swift and Bon Jovi.
So they dip down into this mining colony, and as you said, it is a bunch of gritty men moving space rocks around.
I like they uncover the dead doctor too.
Yes, the doctor has died in a cave-in, quote unquote. And it's nonsensical rock moving, but whatever. I get it. They're in a mine. There's little doohickeys. They're doing mining things. And while they are exploring this place, not only are Trip and T'Pol the most like noticeable, famous people probably there, they also just wander around while talking about their personal lives at a high enough volume that everyone can hear them. About, you know, do you believe Minetta had a baby, not a baby? Like, just zero opsec from these two. And sure enough, they eventually run into Bait. And the Bait Trip runs into is this guy who immediately comes over and says, hello, friend. Would you like to be extremely space racist with me? I would like to explain to you all of my space racism immediately, you, a person I've never seen before, and then ask you to come to a meeting. The FBI will definitely not be there to arrest you.
To be fair, a lot of racists that I've encountered in life have been that dumb and blatant. So we can sit there and act like Florida. This is...
He knows, like, well, I know, yeah, that this checks out.
Where are you from? Pensacola? Hey, we're going to... What's up, buddy? Hey, I noticed you beamed in here with a lady with devil ears.
I'm not making a statement about Florida at any given frame of time. If you've ever been to Florida, you know that those rednecks are like this. Like, that's should've. Just it, true, okay?
The fucking Ohio-Kentucky border, man. Like,
it's just true.
Tripp's like, yeah, totally. I'll go check it out. And, you know, they have their rally. And
he goes to his little Klan rally. Like, oh boy.
Again, for Star Trek, this is a Klan rally. And I think for some other sci-fi properties out there where, you know, you don't end up in the Federation with the beautiful thing and they try to tell like a more gritty story, like would these guys come off the way that they do? Maybe not. Like, these guys aren't calling for genocide. They're not calling for war.
Oh, no. This guy, Josiah, who's the one giving off the speech here at the Klan rally, he is not wrong. He's like,
he's basically saying, like, don't let the rich people come in and take over the neighborhood and gentrify us.
Yeah, like, the Zindi killed 7 million people. Did they even apologize? No. What are we going to do about it? Oh, we're going to find other aliens and we're going to partner up with them, like the Vulcans, who just killed a whole bunch of people at our embassy there a couple months ago. I mean, these are all facts. We know they're all true. We watched it happen.
There's only so far you can go in an episode. And again, this is why this would have been a great replacement to the temporal Cold War, is because these are very relevant topics that are being discussed, and it's a shame that they had to rush it.
Yeah.
Earth's government is absolutely mishandling things, and we have been able to watch Star Trek, and that's always been the thing. It's like, there's life in Starfleet on a starship for TOS. You're just, all you know about Starfleet is what you see on Enterprise with the occasional communication. TNG really built out the network. You're meeting other captains. You're seeing the admirals. You're going back to Starfleet Command. Like, this is an organization that spreads and spans, and there's great people and there's terrible people and there's good decisions and bad decisions. But you've never really had that genuine connection with Earth. I hadn't seen this stuff yet until you get into like Picard. You said there's a little bit in Deep Space Nine. Voyager certainly doesn't touch it to the degree that there would have been stuff there. And it's hard to tell that story. You're telling a story about this egalitarian future pseudo paramilitary organization.
Mm-hmm.
But you're always focused on the people in the know making the decisions that impact everybody else. Picard season one, there was some interesting stuff because it's like, hey, I did Wolf 359 and I, you know, really fucked shit up, and that's something I got to live with. In this, like, hey, man, Starfleet's just the fucking kind of like the military. They're not even like real military. They are space. It's NASA. And it's very similar to the way that High Command was able to take over Vulcan because they controlled space travel. They controlled material coming in. And they supplanted the government of Vulcan with the space authority. And that's what's happening with Starfleet. Starfleet's out there making decisions that impact all of humanity. And, you know, what RoboCop's going to say later on in his speech is like, you've gone out there and you've given our home address to God knows who.
Oh yeah. Well, let's restrain. I want to wait.
Sure.
Because Paxton's speeches are the key point of this whole episode.
So, you know, in the end, you've got Earth, you and me going to work, working our 9 to 5, whatever, in the lurch. And it's like, God, what space whores are being inflicted on us? And you're turning to the government and the government's just like, okay, well, that happened and we're passed. We're going to hand out some awards. There's going to be no sort of like coaching or touching base. And we're just kind of shuffling people towards us. And you've got the mass public like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and the key difference between the two speeches, between this Josiah guy and Paxton, is Josiah's got the more working class argument of, they didn't apologize. Like, we've been fucked with. Like, people have died. Kind of level one, right? And he gives that whole thing off. And he does well with it. So what happens is they get caught in their investigations. So the dragon stuns T'Pol as she investigates the death of the doctor, And the Klan rally turns into a Tucker not appreciation party after Josiah just like calls him out and says, yeah, him over there. That's the guy, you know? And they wind up brought before Paxton on the, you know, the principal part of the space station. And that's when we really get to understand what's going on here. And Paxton starts to make a turn from completely cartoonish villain to someone that you kind of have to respect. He's not completely wrong. And I'm just going to read the speech he gives. It's just perfect. Okay. And then I want to talk about it. So they have some back and forth. He insults their relationship. He mentions, yes, your kid is real and that she's sleeping through the night. He suggests, in fact, that like, he's had kids of his own, so he's familiar with the struggle. And when Tripp demands to see her, he says this, no. And no is a word that Starfleet better get used to hearing from now on, because up until today, it's always been yes, hasn't it? Yes. Yes, go right ahead, roam the stars. Yes, inform potentially hostile species of the whereabouts of Earth. Yes, entrust the entire future of our world to non-human creatures who don't even feel like we do, while staring at T'Pol. Yes, promote the total degradation of mankind by encouraging alien-human relations. Well, yes is a word that ends here and now. I'm returning Earth to its rightful owners. I'm giving Earth back to humanity, back to human beings. It's my life's work. It is what I was born to do. And there is not one, not an alien, not a human, that will stop me from achieving it. Fucking perfect. What a speech. First, not wrong. This is wild. Humanity is in danger every time Enterprise goes out there and says, here we are, this is where we are, which they were doing in season one, that they now acknowledge was fucking stupid. Right? It like in the plot of the show. Archer acknowledges
is stupid.
Yeah, like Archer's openly acknowledged was stupid.
And you and I have criticized too that Archer's out there making unilateral decisions for all of Earth. He's not consulting with Forrest or the president of Earth or anything. It's just, I'm out here and I'm doing whatever I want. And if it falls back on Earth, oh well.
So many times during this entire run of the show, you specifically have brought up how batshit it is that Archer's out there just running his own playbook, making decisions about the future of Earth, both in his cartoonish ineptness in, hey, here's where it is, and also just deciding what policy is going to be. And here we are at the end, and John Paxton is the one saying, this was a bad idea. Looks what it led to. The Zindi killed 7 million people.
Yeah,
not wrong, but he is 100% dedicated to what he believes. And while he's not wrong, maybe about those data points, he's clearly taken it in a much more extreme direction. It's not just we have to defend ourselves like Samuels. It's aliens are unclean and must be purged from the Earth because that is the only way we're going to preserve it from those that would destroy it and us, because humanity is Earth. Which is, that's where it's like, okay, well, he's the villain. That's not acceptable. But what he's saying is like not that far from where Samuels is at, where he's like, I don't necessarily like these people, but I know I need them, right? I'm practical. I used to be in Terra Prime, but I'd rather us not get smushed by the Romulans or the Klingons, so we should probably make some friends. Can't undo that, what's happened.
I said that, you know, like, RoboCop's not really calling for a genocide or war or violence. He just wants the aliens off of Earth. But then contrast with him looking at that speech of Green, who was over there committing genocide and stuff. Like, I think they've certainly made a solid bridge that like is phase two, the Terran Empire. You know, it's step one, get them off Earth. And step two is subjugate. Like, again, this guy, he is not a good guy. He's not saying pure nonsense and bad scripting, but this is not somebody that you can root for because he is clearly evil
and driven. They also managed to convey that as well. So he literally says there was nothing that will prevent me from achieving it. And of course, Peter Weller's just so crushing every one of these lines out of the park.
Do you think it's because he's looking for work? Like, you know, he's got to be set up well financially, but he's not getting pulled into stuff. And like, here's a chance to get back into some nerd properties. And like, whereas a lot of other guest actors might have like not given due consideration to the lines, he was like, I'm going to knock this out of the fucking park.
He knows that like, if he does, first of all, yes, this is his job. He's going to do his job well. He's good at it. But second, well, these are powerful people that can get me work in the future. And also I can be on the convention circuit. And if it's because I fucking crush this thing, that's just good for me on every level. And sure enough, like I'm pretty sure he got cast and Into Darkness because of this, you know,
I should hope so. But I mean, it's also good script and it's reasonable stuff. You're not sitting there and throwing techno babble out or talking about, you know, the fish people of Pluma Prime. It's, you know,
in fact, this is the most easy material to get into is humanity not wanting to deal with aliens
being victimized.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm sure it's very easy for him to get into this mode. But after giving that incredible speech, we find out that this mining station apparently can lift off.
It's not just Terra Prime. It's the Terran faction from StarCraft. And like any good Terran Starfleet or StarCraft, building unit, it can lift off and relocate to move on to greener pastures.
Yeah, this mine has no further Vespene gas, so we need to be able to move. And it can go to warp for brief jumps. Makes sense, right? A mining colony that can move from asteroid to asteroid that might have something worth getting off of it. A little bit of warp here and there gets you between things a lot faster. But he's not going to the asteroid field. No, he's going to Mars. And he plops down on Mars. This is where they're spending all their effects budget, by the way, is this thing moving around. And plops down on something called the Verderon Array. We get one last important plot line on Enterprise, and that is after Mayweather has had a nice roll in the hay with Gannett, who's, you know, wanting him to stick around. They're clearly building the whole, I want you to stay on Earth for a while. And, you know, definitely
you got to build towards that scene. Was anything you said true? All of it was true. I miss you.
Oh, you know where we're headed for part two. Before seeing the future, you know, she's got her clothes on and Archer comes in and Travis is a little like, hey, I thought it was okay if I banged my ex, like seemed to be okay with all those, Orion's rolling around. Thought it was my turn. And Archer and Reed's like, yeah, sorry, no, we're here to collect her because she's a spy for Terra Prime. She's honeypotted you, Travis. I'm sorry.
They're over there collecting info on us. We've lost contact with the away team that you've been sitting here and kind of like worried about, and she's been distracting you from. So don't you look like the big dummy. I'm surprised he didn't just sack her ass right there.
He's got to restrain that power for the people that's really required for her. You know, he's got space races to take care of later. So they have a scene where they're interrogating her. They find holes in her story. Reed's actually effective at his job for a change. And eventually she says she wants a lawyer. Magic words, apparently, even the 22nd century. And ship her off to the brig and say, let her call whoever she wants. That's the rules, apparently, in this United Earth. You get American right to legal counsel. And
interesting. Well, you know, what are the stakes here, really? You got two crew members on the line. They don't really know the full spectrum of what's going on at this point. So I don't think that season 3 Jack Bauer Archer would be warranted shoving her in an airlock and threatening to, you know.
She's a Earth citizen, though. Like, shoving an alien into the airlock is something you can kind of get away with, but they're indicating, like, I can't violate your civil rights.
Listen, you know, it's a bold tomorrow. You got to let go of the old ways. Like, it's
sometimes you got to oppress some people. Get the job done.
A feather in the cap of Terra Prime that there is this double standard. I don't know. Her rights being respected where everybody else just gets their heads slammed against the bulkhead. It sticks out. It's noticeable.
Yeah. You don't want to do it to your 2000s hottie though. The last of the 2000s hottie, by the way, RIP. Not that she's dead, just it's the last one.
Listen, man, ever since the Orions, it's all been downhill. Like,
she would have definitely been like top five in any other season.
Yeah.
the Orions kind of like spoiled that for everybody. And the abs from the last two seasons. I'm kind of over it, right? Like, oh, look, someone with their shirt off. It's Enterprise, whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm just not interested in it anymore.
I take that back. Whatever I said about the Orions being down there, Jolene Blaylock's abs coming in force. In the mirror universe stuff, still potent.
Discord was like, even despite everything I know about evil Hoshi, and then just did the wood thing. It's like, yeah, of course. Yeah. get it.
So the Terran mining station lands. For all the great script writing and connective tissue and reasonable escalation of plot that we've seen up to this point. The mining station lands, and then a claw comes out and grabs a pipe.
That's it. That's jacking in.
And now they've got control. That's that. What's it called? The Verderon?
The Verderon array.
That's a female installation. And that pipe that the mining station has grabbed is actually its arm. And we're now using classic Star Trek, where you've taken a very powerful woman with a laser that can graffiti the moon,
and you grabbed it
by the arm.
Oh no, it's immobilized. You grabbed her at her weak point.
Mm-hmm. that's the grab claw. That it might not sound like it would work, but trust me, if you've been watching Star Trek with us, this move works.
It works every time. It
7 of 9.
You grab a woman on the arm. Doesn't matter. She'd be super powered.
Probably the Borg Queen, too. I mean, that was foolish of them to never think to grab her by the arm. They could have saved a lot of lives.
But
they grab it.
Whatever the Verderon array is, apparently it's a powerful laser used to deflect comets. Apparently it can also be used to perhaps threaten all of Earth with destruction using said super beam.
If you thought the security on the Federation Foundation was bad, just wait until you see the Verderon array.
So
here's the deal. President of Earth 20 years ago, the Vulcans, they want to give us a super laser to defend us from like Armageddon comets. They want to build it facing the Earth. And I get a weird vibe off of High Command. Maybe you should put it like on the other side of Mars. No, just trust the Vulcans. They're math nerds. They know best. Yeah, but it's like a Death Star laser. And I wonder with like after the Zindi attack, when they carve the unrealistic line from Florida to Venezuela, if the people on the Verderon array were like, do you think they're going to reconsider our request to move this fucking thing? Before it,
like... pointed the other direction. I don't know.
Yeah. RoboCop speech.
Yeah, so there's another RoboCop speech that's sent off from here, which is definitely like the true villain statement. More great monologuing. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I want to say,
as he's given his monologue, they are going around the room and showing like all of the workers like nodding their head in support. And for being the bad guys, and I've seen a lot of fantasy and sci-fi now where there is the bad guy faction.
Mm-hmm.
Terra Prime, their diversity score is A++.
DEI was hard at work there 20 years before it was existent. This is the most multicultural, multiracial, evil Nazi like organization you've ever seen.
You would think that Google Gemini came up with this group of Nazis. No, but I like it because it's not just a bunch of dicks sporting goods villains like, yeah, we're going to derail it. Like,
it's humanity. Everyone's in this bucket of, well, we're all the same relative to those guys.
Right.
And suddenly your in-group expands. Yeah. It's actually a good concept.
Like, okay, yeah, you've got this guy who, for all intents and purposes, is like, the evil white capitalist or whatever. But like all of his, there's a lot of people buying into this thing. I love the diversity casting in this, and it's just showing that everybody from all walks can get behind this dude's crazy ass actions, because Earth has been, the average Joe on Earth has been left in the lurch to such a strong degree here that nobody knows that the post-scarcity utopia is waiting for them with transporters and holodecks and Ryza. They just see that other people have been making decisions and they don't get a vote, and that needs to change. So his ultimatum is, I've got a U-ray pointed at Earth. I'm going to fuck the moon up a little bit and show you guys I'm serious. And if all the aliens don't get off of Earth, then I don't.
I'm going to start doing stuff with my U-ray.
Yeah.
So he says, the whole thing wraps with a speech, which concludes with, as of this moment, mankind casts off the shackles of alien interference and now determines its own fate, its own destiny, Terra Prime, forever. Just great writing to put in his mouth. He's just so good at this material. And just a fantastic Trek villain. And only one that you could do on Enterprise. So it's such a great find for them to get this voice out through this vessel to make it work the way that they do. Just a fantastic idea by Manny Coto. And it sets the table for the true series finale of Star Trek Enterprise. And what is it?
We're going to be going into Terra Prime, aptly named Season 4, Episode 21. A human isolationist leader threatens to destroy Starfleet Command unless all the aliens leave the Sol system immediately. I'm surprised he doesn't just zap Starfleet Command off the bat, although maybe he recognizes that there's a need to have some sort of a space exploratory agency running patrols.
You know, kind of have ships to defend Earth.
The picture on the Memory Alpha is a great screenshot from StarCraft. We've got
a transportation ship, and we got like a missile battery. We got a beam battery.
I think that's a nuclear launch happening there, actually.
It only gets better from what we've seen in the next episode. So
also, again, same deal with Khan, and that's really the level I'm gonna have to put this Paxton guy on, because like the delivery and the presence is so big with this dude.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you've got a mismatch. You can't have another ship. You can't have a private vessel, a private Earth vessel, go against Enterprise and the crew. You got to find a way to make them become a credible threat where getting into ship combat or Archer fist fighting Paxton isn't the answer to solve the plot. It's got to be smarter than that. And this is a great framing device that they've set up in this.
I agree, obviously. I can't wait to watch this again next. I can't wait to watch this with you next week. Like, we both enjoyed it.
We just let this go to an hour and a half instead of cutting it in two, because I don't want to wait.
Because we don't want to stop. Like, it's, I really am enjoying watching it again and having this conversation, because so many of the things that you've said specifically, Peter, just get paid off so well here, and presents a conundrum that seems like authentically something that they would have had to have dealt with while creating the Federation. Like, something like this was bound to happen.
Did Manny Coto sit there and go like, all right, I'm getting in charge of this thing. I'm going to watch season one and season two with a notepad. And here are my big questions about things that were unintended consequences. Like the shit he's nailing here and the stuff that I've complained, I don't think it's anything that Bran or Rick Berman gave a second thought to. And they're just like, okay, we're going to do this. And then the fucking spider people are going to come and, you know, potentially eat, or like shit that you as a viewer are like, do you realize what you just did here? Do you realize the repercussions? Because RoboCop does. And I don't think he's happy about it. He's going to go fucking kidnap a space laser.
I look forward to watching this episode with you next week. And I look forward to all the rest of you getting to listen. See you then.